This is music from the drummer Daniel Friedman, featuring the guitarist Lena Loeke. Welcome to The Checkout. It's also a podcast on iTunes. Subscribe to it. I'm Simon Rettner. The drummer from New York City with an affinity for Afrobeat joins us today to talk about his recording Imagine That, featuring the guitarist Lena Loeke, among many others. He'll tell us how magical Lena Loeke is, the guitarist from Benin, West Africa, plus some magical tales of taking djembe lessons by an African master percussionist, a campfire meeting and solo performance from the kora master Toumani Diabaté from Mali, West Africa, and one important lesson he learned hanging out with the legendary American drummer Billy Higgins. And of course, Daniel Friedman has a new record that we'll all check out called Imagine That. Well, he could be named Diabaté, or Sissoko, or Olatunji, some griot name from West Africa. But no, he's just a Jew born and raised in New York. Imagine that. But in all seriousness, Daniel Friedman might as well be a griot from the jazz tradition, coming up playing the drums with Max Roach, Billy Higgins, Vernal Fournier, and so many others. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Daniel Friedman to The Checkout to talk about his recording Imagine That. Daniel, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Was that offensive?
No.
It was, right? It was a joke, right?
Yeah, it's okay. It wouldn't be funny if it wasn't a little offensive, too. So I'm good with it.
But it was this one historic trip by bus in West Africa that sort of set your trajectory forever. Right. And now that you're not just a drummer in the so-called jazz game in New York, but you are the go-to drummer for even some of the best African musicians, Mulatu Ishtaki, who you recently played with at the Met Museum
in
New
fun.
York City, of all places.
Great. Yeah.
So I guess the first question is, how did you find your place here? Like, how was this predestined?
Oh yeah, it was predestined. Yeah, and it was in the cards. No, I think you just kind of follow what you like, you know, the music that you like or the things that you like, and that's what I did. So there wasn't really any plan for that. It was just like, oh, I like this music, you know, different kinds of music, and then opportunities present themselves. And with Mali, it was just a question of a friend of mine who had lived there, was living there, just sent, you know, wrote me a letter back when people used to write letters. And I got this letter, said, come
this
come
is so
to Mali.
Romantic.
It's so romantic. Yes, it's but I went. Yeah, I went.
You got a letter from Bamako.
A letter from Bamako, my friend Joe. So yeah, I just went. I think the trip is more legendary because I wouldn't stop talking about it when I get back. So my friends were all like, "If you please stop talking about your trip to Africa," but it was life changing, I guess. Or that would be fair to say.
Well, let's get into the music first, and then we can talk about Africa next.
This is
Determined Soul. Thank you. Jason Linder wrote this for you, also on that famous Mulatu Ishtake gig.
Yeah.
It's just kind of weird how this all works out, right? Jason Linder also happened to play on David Bowie's last recording.
He did. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, I think Mulatu contacted Jason, and Jason put a band together from New York, and then he, you know, he knew that I would be right for it. So,
did he write this not only with you in mind, but did he have Mulatu in mind when he wrote this tune?
No, this is before Mulatu.
This
is a few years before. No, this tune was. I almost commissioned Jason. I was like, hey, I need a tune like this in this kind of vibe, and I'm missing something like that. Do you have anything? So he had a kind of, yeah, he had a little sketch, and we worked on it together.
And I feel like he has some of the largest ears of any musician I've ever met.
Insane. And we went to high school together.
At LaGuardia.
We went to LaGuardia. Yeah.
Of the performing arts.
And we had my first, like...
On the upper west side of Manhattan.
That's right. Yeah, like first playing...
Which is, you know, if people don't know, one of the prestigious performing arts school in the country.
Fame, I want to live... Yeah. That was us. We were standing on the tables, you know, choreographing dance routines, throwing our lunch at each other. No, not quite. But we did practice a lot, and there were a lot of great players. And when I was a kid, and I went to tour that school, and I saw Eric McPherson, the great drummer, playing duo with Abraham Burton, alto, and they were killing. And I was, you know, I was 12 or 13, and I was like, oh my God, this is possible. So it's all I wanted to do was just be around that. And Jason was there playing great. He was like a Bud Powell clone. He was into Bud Powell, and he was a disciple of Barry Harris. So,
and this is also when Max Roach also came in and visited?
No, I went to the University of Massachusetts Jazz in July, like a summer program, and Max was the teacher there. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those things of being young and naive, like not having much fear, like, wow, he's my hero. But yeah, I just talked to him and like, hey, Max, can I call you? And he's like, sure. So became like developed, you know, a friendship with him.
Really? And did you get to hang out with him?
Yeah, I would hang out with him, have pizza, talk to him on the phone, just call him.
Wow.
A lot of it wasn't, you know, necessarily just like, you know, drums. It was just, you know, hanging out, life and...
And were you aware of, like, all of these really, shall I say, just eccentric, kind of crazy-ass jazz recordings that Max Roach made over the years with choruses and, you know, really
I was aware of some of it. I mean, I had, around that time, I went to see Max. My grandfather got us tickets to see Max with Cecil Taylor. I think it was at Town Hall. And my grandfather left after a few minutes, but I stayed. You know, so there was, yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily aware. I was more like, you know, with Bird and Clifford Brown and
the more inside stuff, because
yeah.
Max was pretty.
But I had the M Boom records, and Max was always encouraging me and everybody really to write music and be like a complete musician. I don't think he was really worried about drumming in terms of like certainly not in terms of like as a sport or a competition or how fast you can play or anything like that, even though, of course, he was incredible with that. But it was really more about music. He was always encouraging me to write music and play hand percussion, too.
Well, let's listen to you, Daniel Friedman, as the complete musician, the songwriter as well. Oh, baby, you're playing drums on here, too, should add.
Thank you. Baby Aya. That's for my daughter.
That's your daughter?
Yeah, my youngest daughter. And it was a kind of a semi, it's a joke a little bit, because she would never sleep. And this song is kind of high energy. So it's a mix of a lullaby and high energy, because it's like, I just, the melody came to me while I was just dancing around the house, praying that she would go to sleep one 4:30 in the morning night. So.
And what is Angelique Kidjo, the special guest artist you have on here, what is she saying at the end?
She's saying, go to sleep, beautiful Aya. And then I had to throw in my other daughter's name because that wouldn't be fair. So go to sleep, Alona. And then she says something about baby daddy. She calls me baby. You know, she could sing anything and it would sound good. So I was happy. It's in Fon. She wrote it in Fon. And then...
Which is the native tongue of Benin?
Of Benin. Yeah, actually, you know what? Lionel translated my words into Fon. And then I asked Angelique after to sing on it, and she was very generous and lent me her voice. And at the end, I'm not sure what she's saying. She has a little riff at the end that's amazing. So
the guitarist, Lena Lewecki, who you just referred to, is also a special guest artist on your recording, Blue Note recording artist, also been on the show, which you can listen to. So quickly, how many countries have you been to in West Africa?
137. No, I'm kidding. I spent a bunch of time in Senegal. And Mali.
So coming up from this more Western tradition of jazz and, you know, playing jazz and 4/4 and, you know, understanding the feel and the inflections, what was immediately off-putting or just disturbing about all the drums that you were listening to by Dudu and Jai Rose or Sabar when you were there?
It was just that sense of like, okay, there's all these moments where I have no idea where the one is. And it's hard to ask someone that question. Like, what do you mean the one? Like, that's not even a concept, you know, for a lot of people, you know. So you take a lesson, you say, hey, wait, I don't understand what's going on here. Can you count this off for me? And then, you know, this master drummer would say, sure. One, two, three. Vrakadatududa. You know, and then they just go. It's just like, so the count off is more like on your marks, get set, not like this is where the pulse is. So it's a different way of learning music, and a lot of, you know, you have to have a very strong memory, and it's your intellect has to be, you have to be sharp.
Now, we made a joke of you, you know, being a Jew from New York, or
hilarious,
you know, just a white person from New York, you know, studying this really heavy griot century old traditions of drumming. Do you ever feel like you're not cut out for it, or you're not from the lineage, you're not from the tradition? Can you play this music? I mean, you have to be part of the family, right?
I mean, that's a good question and a big question for not just for myself, but I think for people all over the world. You know, how do you see yourself? How do we all see ourselves? And when we're interested in other cultures and other things that we're not necessarily, you know, that we didn't grow up with, you know, I haven't spent a lot of time really thinking about that while I'm diving into things, because it's not helpful. And I don't think ultimately, I don't know. I don't think we're all humans and there should just be love for music and art and sharing. And you'll know right away when you're hanging out with people, if that's the story.
But there is, I will also say on that note, having been to Senegal and having interviewed some of the griot masters there, I won't name names, but some of the major players or musicians that, you know, also have vested business interests along with their playing amazing music, kind of treat their operation like a mafia.
Oh, I mean, it's not, I'm not trying to paint like some super, it's all love and great. I mean, you know.
And it was really hard to infiltrate, and it's really hard to get an interview, or really hard to even speak to a person about their music.
It's a lot of it I've found with traveling and learning and stuff is the introduction. Who is it that sent you, you know? So, you know, if I went to Cuba and I got an introduction from somebody who's a master here, then it's like, oh, okay. That's it, you're in, you know? So it's like, who sent you the Vinny, you know, who? who sent you is a big part of it. But at the same time, I met a lot of people all over the place that wasn't like that. It was just, I think if you approach people with humility, you know, if you're humble and you're like, hey, you know, you don't want to, what's the point of going to some musician who's a master of their folklore and saying, I'm this amazing guy from, you know, and I've toured and I've done all this. That doesn't matter. And it's, you
so
know.
Take us to a part in this record that reflects a what you feel to have a strain or a Senegalese or Mali feeling on a song.
Huh. That's a good question. I don't think there's any point that specifically has that.
That's what I was saying, because yeah. This record has this very kind of Afro beat vibe, but it isn't sourcing any particular.
I mean, I really hope to make music that's not one thing, you know, that's not like, oh, there he's doing this, you know, or there's that. It's like it's music, and also I don't want to I think it would be dishonest for me to come out and say, here's my authentic rendition of Mbalax, you know, like, which relates to your original question. I'm not that. I'm me. I grew up in Manhattan, you know, listening to my father's played avant-garde jazz music with like Albert Eiler and all these guys. So there was that around the house, and then it was like hip hop and Latin music, and so I'm a, you know, product of New York City from the 70s and 80s, and that's what I'm not trying to be. I put it this way, I'm not trying to be too specific on one thing, you know. I think that's, I don't know, that's less interesting to me. So that's, to me, that's a compliment that I managed to like just make music.
Thank you.
The Sisters Dance. We're listening to Daniel Friedman. Are you familiar with the music of Derek Ripper by chance?
No, I'm not.
But another really interesting musician from Cape Town that studied classical guitar playing Bach, and but then venturing off to basically becoming completely obsessed with the griots from Mali, and then transcribing music made for the 21-string harp for his classical for the kora, to his guitar.
Oh wow!
And basically playing the music of Toumani Diabaté and all these on his guitar. But he also plays Humberto Gismonti.
That's a nice night. That's one story actually that came to mind. That because Toumani lived in the neighborhood I was staying in Mali. And one night we went to this place he liked to hang out. It was like an abandoned building, and he liked to sit in the back of this abandoned building, basically among rubble. And his couple of friends would come and make a fire, and he'd play kora all night. So I had some nights like that that are just like just magic, crazy. You know, sitting there by firelight, and Toumani is playing solo for us. Holy man.
Have you ever had the cosmic musical equivalent of, you know, hearing Toumani Diabaté play solo kora by the fire here in New York with a heavy musician?
Absolutely. A lot. Yeah. A lot. I mean, whether it's been in rumbas with like masters, or I went to Billy Higgins' apartment in...
In L.A.?
No, he was staying at Chris Anderson's house. And, you know, holding the Rod cymbal on our fingers, like playing time on the cymbal.
Just
practicing, you know. I mean, there's a lot. I have a lot of experience.
Tell me that Billy Higgins thing.
Being 14 or 15 and like, hey, Mr. Higgins, can I have a lesson? Can I hang out with you? And he's like, sure. Here's my number. Come over tomorrow. You know.
And so what, he put a cymbal on his finger?
He didn't have any drums, but he had the cymbal, so he used, you know, put the finger, the cymbal, you can kind of suspend it on your finger as a cymbal stand. So we just hung out. He showed me some things. We had a practice. We did some brushes and talked about the history of drumming a lot.
And what was the lesson that he was trying to teach you with the...
How to break up the cymbal beat so it's not boring, and and to support the soloist with a different cymbal beat. And he demonstrated like some phrasing, different ways to phrase it, and that was beautiful. And it reminded me of a story. I don't know if there's some drummers or people listening, but this was kind of an interesting thing, which was that in this lesson, Billy was saying to me what an impression and what a big deal it was that Elvin Jones came along and just changed the instrument. And it was like, you know, he was kind of saying, I have the recording of this thing somewhere, but I have to listen exactly. But basically what Billy was saying was like, oh, I better just be myself because I'm never going to be like Elvin. And that's, you know, it's too incredible. And then Jeff Ballard recently told me a story that Elvin said he wished he could swing like Billy Higgins. So that's just like an amazing kind of circle there. That like, here's Billy saying, wow, I have to be me because Elvin's just so incredible. And then Elvin said that apparently he wanted to get his ride cymbal to be as happening as Billy Higgins.
Wow.
So it just goes to show you, you know, you never know, and you just try to be yourself.
And that's why you just got to try to be authentic.
Yeah, try to be yourself and as much as you can.
Daniel Friedman, thank you so much for sharing these amazing stories. His recording is called Imagine That. Thank you so much for spending some time with
us.
Thank
you for having me. It's really fun talking to you.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you all for joining us today and tuning in. If you want to check us out on our website, go to checkoutjazz.org, where we archive all of our interviews and our conversations with the Westerlies and more. We have some social media pages on Facebook, The Checkout from WBGO, and on Twitter, at Checkout Jazz. I'm at Simon Rettner. I'd like to give a special thanks to our production intern, Jasmine Murray, and a special thanks to Sarah Gilletti. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. Thanks for checking us out.